Oh, wow. There's a lot of people out there. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank John for asking me, and certainly welcome to newcomers. You know, I was talking to a friend this morning, or this afternoon, actually, and she asked me if I was nervous. And I said, well, not really. And then she said, well, you know, it's the first of the year, and so people that haven't been not been going to enough meetings are going to start going to more meetings, so it's probably going to be packed tonight. She was right. So I will say I have this little feeling in my stomach that is best described as absolute terror. So what I'm going to do is what we're supposed to do up here. I'm going to tell a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and hopefully what I'm like now. My intent is not to spend too much time on what I was like, nearly enough to convince you that I'm qualified to be here. There's a couple of reasons for that. I was a blackout drinker, so so there was a whole lot of it I don't remember, and the other was just not that interesting. So I was born in Chicago. Go Bears, okay. Sometime before the middle of the last century. I came from a dysfunctional family. My dad was an alcoholic who really loved geographics. So one of my sisters was born in Beaumont, Texas, and the other was born in Houston, Texas. And then we went back to Chicago, where I spent most of my growing up years. I don't remember my first drink. You know, I hear a lot of stories in here about, you know, their whole world changed when they took their first drink, and I don't remember my first drink. What I do remember is that I can't think of a time that it wasn't good. You know, and I know that from the very start, whenever I drank, things went a little bit better. You know, I could talk a little bit better. Later on, I could actually bowl a little bit better, I thought, but turned out that wasn't true, as for most things. Yeah, I have two sisters, neither one of which contracted this disease, which is a very nice thing. My drinking career started, I would have to say, seriously, when I joined the Navy. I don't remember ever being falling down drunk before I joined the Navy, except the night before when my dad and I sat there and got drunk together. I got my first 502 when I was about 20, and that was one of five. I ended up with five 502s. And so I wasn't even that good at that, because I've heard of people with, you know, I got five 502s in 3 days. And I wasn't that good. I do remember my first blackout, and it, I remember the results of my first blackout. It was New Year's Eve, and it was 1963. And I woke up the next morning, and I guess I had been some kind of heroic figure the night before. And some guy was at the party, and he broke out a knife, and I talked him out of his knife, and I took him out of the party, and I came back, and then I left with one of the better-looking girls at the party. I really wish I remembered it, but, you know, that's part of the deal. So blackout drinking was not a bad deal. It was right after that my sister got married, and so I looked at that and decided it was time for me to get married. And so I got married, and I was married for, I was married for 20 years. I sat down and figured it out. We were actually together about six of that 20, you know, because that's funny. That was my mom and dad's MO, was they'd separate consistently, and we'd go off someplace a couple of times. We went to boarding houses and, you know, and
And then we'd see him again in a few months, and we'd get back together and try and be a family again. And then, you know, my dad would take another geographic. And I remember one, he went to San Francisco for, I think it was a year and a half. And finally, he wrote my mom and asked for the money to come home. So she sent him $6 and told him to take a pogo stick back. And then he moved out to, he took another trip out to Los Angeles area, Gardena. And he was out there about 10 months when my mom decided that it was time for us to go out there. So we sold everything and moved out to Gardena. and that's where I joined the Navy from. I loved the Navy from the very start, you know. Because, you know, as soon as he got out of the United States, you could drink. You know, and even as early as Hawaii, you could drink. And I found that I loved to drink as much as I could, as often as I could. You know. And so we had gotten married, and I think we were married about 2 years when we separated. And after about 10 months, I guess after about 7 or 8 months, she went to the chaplain and complained that I was not sending her any money. And that was true. I had decided that she didn't need my money. And so we met with the chaplain, and the chaplain decided that that I probably had a drinking problem. So I was 24 at this time, and they sent me to alcohol rehab. The Navy did. It didn't do quite as well as it did for Linda. And incidentally, Linda, thank you, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story in its entirety. I really am. Anyhow, I went to my first AA meeting, and it was up on Signal Hill in Long Beach. It was in an oil field, and it was in a little shack that was a combination equipment room and lunch room. And I remember them saying, if you want what we have, and I'm looking around the room, and it's like a bunch of guys, they're like 60 or some ridiculously old age. And I was like, oh my God, if I was that old, I'd quit drinking too. Yeah. Well, I got out of treatment, and I didn't drink for 3 days. Okay, and then by that time, the anabuse was pretty much worn out. You could feel a little bit of the effects, but, you know, not too bad. And then I was just back off to normal. And I had two daughters. One had already been born before I went into treatment, and then shortly after, the second was born. And I just continued. You know, just continued drinking. And in 1976, I bought a house up in Vista. And shortly after that, I was on shore duty at this time, 76 to 79. And bought a house, and then I bought a cleaning service. And so I was working full-time, you know, teaching aircraft control for the Navy, and then running a business and commuting from Vista to North Island, or to Point Loma, I'm sorry, which is a fairly long commute. And part of it was I just wore myself out because, you know, I hate to say this, if there's any janitors in the house, they are overall not the most dependable people. You know? And so I'd get called at 11 o'clock at night and, sorry, sir, you probably are the best janitor in the county. get called at 11 o'clock at night. I'm not going to work anymore, so I'd have to go up and, you know, clean the toilets at 12 o'clock. I went on a bender, and what I was doing at this point was I'd do that, but when I left for work in the morning, I'd have a half pint of Jim Beam in the van with me, and I would drink on that until I got down to the Catalina Lounge, which was my watering hole out in Point Loma, and then I'd stop in there, and I'd have a couple Boilermakers, and I'd go on into the office, and, you know, teach people how to fight it with aircraft. And then I'd go to lunch, and so one day I went to lunch, and, you know, I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm just done. You know, so I'm just gonna sit here and drink. I'm not interested. And you know, the Navy frowns on 25-hour lunch periods. I don't know why that is, but they do. And so I ended up back in alcohol rehab again. And this time it was starting to dawn on me that I really did have a problem. And so I came out of rehab, and I got a sponsor. I started going to meetings and hanging out with AA people, and pretty much having a good time and liking this being a sober thing. But then I got told I was going overseas, and you know, I was a sailor. You know, I was a real sailor, and I loved to party overseas. And so I came up with this amazing plan. Well, now let me tell you, because I in case you haven't figured this out, I'm a really smart guy. Okay, I am. So I came up with this plan. I was going to go overseas, and I was going to do my thing. You know, and then I'd come back and I'd get back in AA, and you know, everything would be fine. So I went overseas and I did my thing and I had a great time, and I came back and the second part of the plan didn't quite go so well. I didn't come back to AA and I didn't stop drinking, and so in 1985 my wife finally said, you know, I'm out of here. Well, actually, she didn't say I'm out of here. Actually, she just went to the bank, took all the money out, took the kids, took my shotgun, and left. And God, what a relief. Oh, thank God. Yeah, because now I can do what I want to do. Yeah. And so we sold the house, and, you know, we didn't get as much as you're getting these days, but I remember it was one of those times when all of a sudden I was going to have a goodly amount of money, and so I was going to go to Aruba. You know, so I took vacation and scheduled my trip to Aruba, and of course I never actually left Pacific Beach. Yeah, but. But that was my story, you know, and then in February 87, I got called into the office on a Friday, and my boss said, "John, we're letting you go, and if it was up to us, we'd let you go today. But your customer wants you to work a couple more weeks to finish up the project you're on. However, for you to do that, for you to work that 2 weeks, you're going to have to meet some conditions. Number one, you're going to have to come to work. And if you're not, you know, call us. Number two, if you go to lunch, you've got to come back from lunch." And so that was Friday afternoon, and I said, you know, okay, you know, I mean, you know, I can do that for 2 weeks, and you know, I meant that. You know, it's only 2 weeks. I can do that for 2 weeks, and so Monday I went to lunch. I'm sorry, it never occurred to me not to go to lunch, and the next thing I knew, it was 9 o'clock at night, and I knew that I screwed it up good this time. And I don't know what my thought process was specifically that night, but I do know today that I had been through alcohol rehab twice, and it got me out of trouble. So I went into alcohol rehab that night. And And somewhere along there, I admitted that I really was an alcoholic, that my drinking just wasn't normal, my life wasn't normal. And And I've missed a couple of points, but I'll get them as I go through the recovery because they're so related to my recovery. I came out of there and I got really, really involved. I was going to meetings like every day. My first sponsor was actually, I met my first sponsor. I worked with him. And my first Sunday in treatment, they sent us up to Old Town Speakers Meeting. And I walked in there, and this guy from my office was sitting there. Now, I told you I'm a smart guy. My first thought was, what's he doing here? He doesn't drink. He doesn't drink. Yeah. Anyhow, he became my sponsor. And he was chairman of the registration committee for the spring roundup. So I was like 5 days out of treatment, 35 days sober, and I'm working the registration desk at the spring roundup. And it was just amazing. It was just amazing. You know, seeing all those people, and they're all, you know, dressed well. 90% of them are dressed well, but they're all smiling and happy and just an amazing time. And so I became involved in that and going to meetings and being of service and all that stuff. The only thing I didn't do was the traditions was those things. So what ended up happening was Father's Day. I went to Old Town Speakers Meeting. I went to dinner after the meeting, and I was driving home, and I was driving by my old watering hole, and I thought, you know, I'm going to stop and play some pool. And something said, John, this is not a smart idea, but you know, I did, and I ended up I had a couple of shots of tequila. And then I went home, and I was, I was pretty crushed. But that started 4 years, of drinking and then not drinking and going to meetings and you know, trying to stay sober and just couldn't do it. And so in the interim, I had gotten three other 502s, and so what ended up happening was March of 1991. I was back in New London, Connecticut, on business, and I was in a hotel lounge having a couple drinks, and there was another guy there, and we talked a little bit, and we decided we'd go out into in a town and visit a couple of clubs. So I was 4 years in the program, and I ended up that night sitting in jail in New London, Connecticut, with my fifth 502. And what I decided was that I was one of those people that AA was not going to work for. And so I came back to L.A. or to San Diego, and I was doing a lot of traveling at that time. I mean, I was on a strange contract, so I was doing a lot of traveling. And in 4 years, I had racked up about half a million frequent flyer miles. So as soon as I walked up and gave them my card, 90% of the time I was up in first class and getting my booze for free. And so I was flying back. I had my booze, and I went to my Wednesday night meeting, and I told him, I was like, you know, I'm one of those guys that AA is just not going to work for. The best I can hope for is that I don't drink in San Diego. And, of course, after the meeting, you know what they did. They come up and hug you and say, keep coming back, because that's what they do. And unfortunately, they mean it. Anyhow, I don't know what happened. I really don't. But all of a sudden, I got a sponsor, and I just started doing the steps, and I had I've been very fortunate in that my sponsors have all been pretty amazing people. But anyhow, I did the steps, and somehow the obsession was removed, and I actually have not had a drink since then. I'm gonna go through a couple of dramatic things that have happened to me in recovery, and I want you to know that there's probably a 99% possibility that make it a probability that I'm gonna get a little bit choked up sharing these things, but it's not a sad thing. It's just when I talk about a couple of things in the program, the gratitude is just so overwhelming that I end up tearing up. And you know, from a guy that was just basically angry most of his life, that's pretty cool. So, anyhow, one of them was the first time I got my driver's license. You know, I should start that by telling you I never went back to take care of that 502 in Connecticut. I was never going back to Connecticut, so you know, just let that sleeping dog lie. And so I got my license for the first time in about 20 or 30 years where I didn't have to take the test or, you know, anything. It was just like, oh, yeah, here you go. Here's your license. And so I was, like, really jazzed. I mean, that's a milestone. It's a milestone for somebody that spent probably 70% of his time driving without a license or insurance or registration or any of that stuff. And so I called my sponsor, and I was like, this is so cool. And he's like, what about that 502? So I went back to take care of that, you know, and I called them and asked them what I needed to do, and they told me, and they said, and you will spend 48 hours in jail. I mean, that's a requirement here. So I went back, and I showed up in the courtroom, and the judge is like, oh, having a little trouble with your license out in California, are you? And I was like, no, actually my license was just renewed. I'm back here as part of the program of AA. And the judge says to me, it's an honor to have you in my courtroom. Yeah. And I had been in a few courtrooms. And I had never had a judge tell me it was an honor. Yeah. And so, but the sponsor I had at the time, his idea of amends is just like, if I'm making an amends to you, then it's about what do you need me to do to make it okay. It's not about what I want to do to make it okay. And so the judge asked three separate times, if there's anything I wanted to ask the court. You know, is there anything you'd like to ask the court? And I'm convinced in my own mind that I could have said, you know, Your Honor, I would just like to go back to San Diego and forget about this. And he would have said yes. But I didn't, so I ended up going to jail for 48 hours in New Haven, Connecticut. And in Connecticut, all drug and alcohol offenses go to the same facility. And so you see that the first-timers that are there for 48 hours, and it's kind of a joke, or I'm just not going to drive when I drink anymore, and you see people that are in there for more serious crimes. And I had the opportunity to talk with a young man that was in there for 25 years, you know, he was drunk one Sunday morning and ran his pickup head on into a car, killed a woman and her baby. Yeah. And so his take was, you know, the state gave me 25 years. I've got life. There's no way I'm ever going to get over this. You know? So I'm grateful that God chose to not put that in my life. But anyhow, it was an honor to be in his courtroom, and that was, that's, wow. So I'm going to flash back
1980, I was overseas, and we were just leaving Mombasa, Kenya, headed for Australia, when the ship got a message that my oldest daughter had tried to commit suicide. And so I came home on emergency leave, and I started about 7 years of going through treatment centers and shock therapy and the whole thing. During that period, we had a couple of fallings out. As a matter of fact, her psychiatrist had told her that she had to let me know how she felt about me, and so I showed up at family treatment, and she stood there and she said, "Dad, I just want you to know, I hate you. I absolutely hate you." Last year, her and her two daughter, her two sons and I went on vacation together. And we went up to Yellowstone, and we had a wonderful time. And 3 years ago for Christmas, I rented the Stephen Foster Lodge up in Laguna Mountains. It's a very nice place to visit, and it's pretty inexpensive. And I got my whole family up there for the first time in about 25 years. My ex-wife, both my daughters, all four of my grandkids, and at that time I had one great grandchild, and we spent the weekend up there. And Saturday night, they had this great big fireplace, and you have these mats. You can throw all these mats down, and then just blankets and stuff. And so all the kids were in front of the fireplace, and I was standing there looking, and I was thinking, you know what? Here it is. There's two generations of my family that have never seen me take a drink, not one. And what a miracle that is. When she was going through that period, and I'm going to tell this story mostly because it dramatizes just how different things are. When she was going through that period, she OD'd on drugs once, and was in a hospital, and that was 84, I think. And so what I did was I got my shotgun and I went looking for her boyfriend. So while she was in a hospital getting her stomach pumped and getting treated for a drug OD, I was cruising the streets just trying to find somebody to shoot. Which, fortunately, I didn't, but, that's what I thought we were supposed to do. That's what I thought being a man was. A few years ago, one Saturday morning, I was sitting at my computer when my daughter called, and she told me that my granddaughter was in a hospital in labor, and she was 13 years old. And her father, my son-in-law, was father. So
that's a hard one to handle. That's a hard one to handle. But what I did, instead of looking for my shotgun, was I picked up the phone, you know, and I called a couple people in AA, and I talked to them. And they helped me through that. As a matter of fact, one person, just as soon as I said what happened, she was just like, "I'll be right there." You know, and actually, that was kind of funny because I walked out of the house, and it turned out that the police were coming looking for my neighbor. And so they asked me who I was and you know, asked me for my ID, and "You're not on the most wanted list." And I was like, "No." So when she pulled up, I'm standing out in front after that phone call. I'm standing out in front with two cops. So anyhow, those are dramatic things, you know, just about how much being in this program has changed me. And you know, I guess those are important, and they are important. But equally important is just how much I've gotten to change who I am and what I am because of this program and the people in it. You know, when I got here, my idea of a man was somebody that drank. Had basically no morals and was angry, you know, and that was the only emotion that I was allowed to show as a man, is that I was angry. You know, it was not okay to be sad. It was not okay to say I'm hurting. You know, it was just okay to be angry. And I did that well, you know. I remember shortly after I got into the program, I started dating this girl, and the first time her daughter saw me, she was like, "Mom, you be real careful of that man, because he's got really scary eyes." You know, and I haven't been told I've got scary eyes in a long time. You know. I have a God, you know, and that's... that's pretty much a miracle in itself, you know. And I spent most of my life either denying a God or being angry at him, you know. And now I have mine, and he works for me. And and that's very cool because it makes life pretty easy. You know, I start most of my mornings. I wish I could say every morning, but I can't. I start most of my mornings with the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer. And that's, yeah, and it works, and he works. And it makes life so easy that, you know, all I have to do is the footwork. You know, it's like being up here tonight. All I have to do is the footwork, and whether the talk is of any value or not is more up to God than it is me. You know? I'm happy. You know, I'm content with my life overall. And I never thought I'd be there. Although there is that story about the old guy at the meeting that you know, every meeting you bit there. You know, kind of serious, taking notes, and just, you know, never smiling. And finally, an old timer comes up and says, "John, are you happy?" "Yeah, for God's sake, tell your face." Yeah, yeah, and that's too much where I am. I'd like to be a little less serious than I am when I'm sharing, but. You know, some of the things that have happened to me in recovery are just so beyond the pale that you know, it is serious. You know, it's serious that I have a God. It's serious that that, you know, I don't have a problem looking in the mirror. It's serious that I don't have to look for my car. It's serious that I've learned it's better to give than to receive, you know. And it is. You know, I will say that I went through a period in sobriety from probably 12 to 15 years where I wasn't going to meetings. I wasn't participating. I really think I would show up every few months for a meeting long enough to take out enough to stay sober for a few more months and then not give anything back. You know, and that's not a very good way to live. And it's not a very satisfying way to live. You know? This is a wonderful New Year's for me, and what it was like was I got up this morning after the AA dance last night, and I went and answered phones at central office. You know, and now I'm here doing this, and it's a wonderful day. It's a really wonderful day, and I think my time's about up, but I do want to put a plug in. You know, I love answering the phones. It is an absolutely pure form of service. You know, you get down there, you kick in a few hours to them. You maybe start somebody on the road to recovery. At the very least, you direct them to a meeting. So, yeah, I love answering the phones. And I think my story is done, and I think we're out of time. And thank you for letting me share.